You are listening to Amplify Your Success Podcast, episode 144. And I want to inspire you today by sharing a guest who's going to reveal the productivity secrets of the most highly creative people. So you ready for this? Let's get started.
Welcome to the Amplify Your Success Podcast. Hey, are you a thought leader, creative entrepreneur, or change maker and want to magnify your impact? Boost influence while creating a financial abundance? Stay tuned for today's inspiring episode with your host, Melanie Benson.
Hey there, inspired entrepreneurs and business leaders. It's your host, Melanie Benson, profit amplifier to online business owners, thought leaders, transformational coaches and mentors, you know, all kinds of awesome people like you. And today I've brought a special guest to reveal how you can tap into highly creative secrets and make more money, make more impact, you know, just literally have a business, a monetizable business around the things you're most creative with. And even if you don't feel creative, you're going to get some very powerful insights. Now, before you listen to the episode, I want to give you an exclusive invitation to join me in my free Amplify Your Success community. This is where I bring together all kinds of movers and shakers, emerging influencers, experts who are building a business around their genius. And the idea is that we collaborate, we connect, we grow together. Now, to help facilitate that, we have some different themes that you'll get to interact on. We always share exclusive training. Sometimes I even invite special guests to come in and teach you how to create more amplification around your superpowers and your genius and the strengths that you want to build your business around. Hey, and we might as well make some more money together. So every week you get a chance to promote yourself, promote what you're doing, share something that will help us get to know you and hopefully attract some partners and some clients. You ready for this? It's free. Come on over to amplifyyoursuccesscommunity.com. And when you do, I will send you 7 days worth of power-packed Amplify Your Business strategies. All right. It's free at amplifyyoursuccesscommunity.com. Go grab your spot in the group. And now let's listen to a power-packed episode. So today we're talking about the secret productivity techniques of successful high achievers. And I'm super excited to introduce you to my dear friend. She's originally from Chicago. Her name is Samantha Bennett, and she is an extraordinary writer, speaker, actor, teacher, and creativity and productivity specialist. She's the author of the best-selling Get It Done, From Procrastination to Creative Genius in 15 Minutes a Day, which Seth Godin called an instant classic. I mean, can you imagine, like, Seth Godin is reviewing your book, right? She's also got a new bestseller, Start Right Where You Are, How Little Changes Can Make a Big Difference for Overwhelmed Procrastinators, Frustrated Overachievers, and Recovering Perfectionists. She's the creator of the Organized Artist Company, which is dedicated to helping creative people get unstuck, focused, and moved forward on their goals. And one of my most favorite moments and memories with my dear friend Sam was she wrote the script for the hit musical In a Booth at Chasen's, the real-life Hollywood love story of Ron and Nancy Reagan, and is working on her latest book, The Secrets of Highly Creative People. She's also, this is how creative people work, she's also been an award-winning marketing expert. She spent 15 years as a personal branding specialist for Sam Christensen Studios. She's been honored as the ultimate marketer finalist at InfusionCon. She's an Infusionsoft certified consultant reseller, and she lives in a cute little tiny beach town just outside of Los Angeles. But let me tell you the most important thing I have learned from this amazing woman, and that is creativity is a talent and a skill that can be nurtured, and that you can actually let all of these creative sparks come together, even though they feel like they're taking you in different directions. So Sam, thanks so much for joining me today.
For having me. There's a giant helicopter going right overhead right now, which is very weird.
So let's get creative with it, right?
Yeah, right? Now we're in a production of Miss Saigon. So yes. I love this because, you know, almost always on these things, people are like, oh, and here I am with my friend. But Melanie and I are actual friends. Like, we actually hang out.
Yeah, we hang out. We do wine. We have a weekly writing group that we are in together to keep us with the feet to the fire and focused. How long have we known each other now? It seems like 5 or 6 years, yeah?
Oh, gosh.
Longer?
More than that. I think I knew you before I moved to Carpinteria, so that would be almost 8 years ago.
So that is one of the magical things about this community we live in. We have the most amazing, influential, and powerful people in our little world here. And so I've been really honored to get to know Sam and be in her stratosphere of creativity, because every time I hang out with you, I learn something new. So I'm excited to talk about your new book and what's emerging around these ideas of, like, there's actually little things we can learn from people who are naturally creative that those of us that don't think of ourselves as creative can learn, right? To really embody that sense of creativity. And, you know, I should say that this was a lot of conversation we had about this, because you are naturally creative and I've never considered myself naturally creative. And so, you know, as you started to share about these secrets and these tips and these insights, I'm like, oh my God, this is brilliant. Like, I need this in my life. So are you?
So I think the thing that happens, it's a very natural mistake, is that people confuse creative and artistic.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is creative. Not everyone is artistic. In the same way that not everyone is musical. But everyone has some area of creative genius. And if you don't know what yours is, it's whatever area or arena or subject that you just seem to be more naturally inclined to solve problems in. You know, like, you just show up and go, well, I don't have any training in this, but obviously this is what should happen here. Or clearly this should go this way, or this should be that way. Those things that you just sort of natively seem to understand and move really swiftly through and have sort of a natural inclination to do, that's your zone of genius. And you probably don't recognize it because you don't think it's that big of a deal. You know, it's not that skill that you've suffered and sweat to learn. It's the thing that you do kind of without really thinking about it. So everyone has at least one of those. And then there's the world of highly creative people. Highly creative people have a bunch of areas like that. They have a lot of things that they're interested in. They have a lot of natural skills and abilities, a lot of things they're sort of naturally good at. And while that sounds like a fantastic blessing, it can also make it really hard to focus.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that I love that you brought up people get confused between being artistic and creative. Because I am certainly not artistic, but I now know that I am creative. And, you know, I think creativity starts in, like, a certain way of thinking about our zone of genius. I want to dig a little bit more into that, because there are so many people that tell me throughout the days that I coach, they're like, I'm not very creative. Like, that's not my thing. Like, I'm a logic person. So let's dig a little bit deeper on what makes a person creative versus highly creative.
Yeah. So creativity, like I said, is really about problem solving. If you've ever solved a problem differently than anybody else has ever solved the problem, congratulations, you are a creative genius. And that can look like a lot of things. I mean, some people have a natural creative genius for knowing what to say to someone when they're upset, you know, or how to make someone feel good when they're not feeling good. Some people have a natural creative genius for being able to, you know, assemble a beautiful meal without ever looking at a cookbook. Some people have a natural creative genius for engineering, for designing things, for spaces, for colors, for shapes, for songs, for, you know, it's that thing that you are just sort of mysteriously drawn to and do kind of effortlessly. And while many of them may not seem like marketable skills or things you can charge for, I'm here to tell you, not only can you charge for it, but you can charge a lot for it, because you have this natural gift, because you're going to work faster and deeper and with greater depth and understanding than somebody who's actually who's done more quote unquote studying of whatever the topic is.
Yeah. And you know, when people are not feeling creative, right? Like I'm going to imagine that even the most creative people at times don't feel creative. And you know, you and I have this dance we do every week with our books, right? And I've had several times when I come and I'm like, I'm not feeling it. And you always have these exquisite ways of connecting the dots and helping me plug back into that creativity. I'm wondering, like, what are some ways that someone can tap into those creative juices? And even if they're not feeling creative, can kind of boost that up in their life?
For sure. Well, the number one way to shut down creativity is to say, be creative.
Like it's a command.
Like it's a command. It's right up there with just relax.
Right.
Like never in the history of time. Or don't cry. Right. Never in the history of time has anybody said, oh, just relax. And the person goes, like, no, that doesn't happen. Same thing with creativity, right? And the pressure to be creative will in fact shut down your ability to imagine and be creative. So you're much, you know, think of it like a cat, you know, you want to sort of come at it a little bit from the side. You know, if you come at it straight on, it's going to run away. But the best ways to be creative, you know, especially if you're trying to think of new ideas, is to start with the world's worst idea. If you can't think of something, just think of something really, really dumb. Something you would never in a zillion years do, something so stupid and weird. Even see if you can crack yourself up a little bit about it. Like, okay, I can't think of anything, but I can like, but a pastrami sandwich, that would be funny. Like that's clearly not what we're going to do. But sometimes starting with a really dumb idea, a really bad, dumb idea can, first of all, loosen you up a little bit and then kind of move you on a road. You know, you can sort of start to follow the sparkly breadcrumbs of like, all right, I'm not sure why I'm thinking pastrami sandwich, but that makes me think of that diner we used to go to across the street from my high school. And that makes me think of this person. And that makes me think of that experience. And now I have a story to tell on my blog post.
So it's literally like, get yourself out of trying to be creative. And it's almost like you reverse engineer yourself into a creative space.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What I notice with highly creative people, though, is that they actually have the opposite problem. They have way too many ideas way too much of the time. They have a zillion ideas all the time. Their ideas wake them up in the middle of the night. Their ideas wake them up in the morning. Their ideas pester them when they're driving. Like, it is a nonstop barrage of ideas. And the thing about that is, I can think of two things about it. One is, if that's you, if you're sitting there going, oh my gosh, that's so me, make sure you have some kind of idea catcher. Whatever it is that works for you. Index cards, voice memos on your phone, Evernote, journals, whatever it is you like to do so that you are capturing your ideas and you are putting them somewhere where they can be kept and referred to and used again sometime. The other thing you want to make sure you do is have a some kind of criteria for your ideas. Like, what is it that's most important to you right now? You know, is it making money? In which case, okay, any idea that's not going to bring in $10,000 does not get dealt with today. You know, or maybe you're at a stage where you're like, no, the money thing's fine. I just really want to reconnect with my own voice, with my own creative impulses. Then great, then that's what you're going to be looking for, is what are the things that just really light you up and make you feel all yummy. It doesn't matter what the criteria is, but to have some criteria so that you're not constantly ping-ponging around between like, that's a good idea. Oh, that's a good idea. What about that good idea? Oh, this is a good idea. I like this idea. Oh, wait, there's that other idea that I forgot I had. Exhausting.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Even though I've never really considered myself a creative person overall, that is something I struggle with for so long. It's like, I would have so many ideas and then you're chasing all these bright, shiny objects and really like developing the inner muscle of what gets your yes and what is a great idea, but you're not going to take action on. And so I love the idea that you would have an idea catcher and that you have some criteria for what's going to get movement from you. And, you know, in my 20 years of coaching people, this is one of the things that I think is it's like the Achilles heel, if you will, of the highly creative people, is they haven't yet realized that just because they have the idea doesn't mean they should pursue it. And so I think sometimes that actually brings people pain. Like it makes their soul suffer a bit, right? To put the pause button on. You know, how would you like advise somebody who's, they're yearning for this thing and they've got all these ideas, they can't, you know, they can't, they don't, haven't developed the discipline, or they don't want to have the discipline to channel some of them into the not right now category. What do you do with that?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of putting things into beta. You know, just if you have a little idea, just try to thin slice it. Like, what's the tiniest possible version of this idea that you can get out into the world as quickly and as elegantly as possible? So, and this is because sometimes the zillion ideas is like, oh, I had an idea for a little blog post, but actually that could be a book, and actually it could be a movie, and actually it could be a series of movies, and a theme park, and, you know, and an international grassroots movement. And like, you know, the idea gets so big that you immediately get overwhelmed and start procrastinating because you can't possibly move forward on an idea that's that big. But just, you know, go like, what's the tiniest version of this that I could get out into the world? Because as you know, as we've all had the experience of, something can seem really great inside your head, and then the minute it hits the air, the minute somebody else reads it or sees it or hears about it, sometimes it blows up in the most beautiful way. Like all of a sudden it's huge. You know, I put up this tiny Facebook post and all of a sudden, boom, a million likes and comments. Other times, crickets. So it's like, stop trying to evaluate the idea inside of your own head before you even do it.
Right.
Go ahead and get some tiny version of it out into the world. You can make it more, you know, more better, gooder later. You can make it more complicated later. But just if it's really on you to do it, then just get a little version of it out.
Yeah. It's almost like you lean into it a little bit and see if it gets traction. See what happens when you get it out of you and other people are experiencing it. Are they excited about it as you are? And I know we've talked about this. Sometimes the things that we think are the best ideas are complete duds when we get them out of our head and it out there in the world. So I love that idea of just kind of test drive it a little bit.
Oh, not only will your favorite ideas not be everybody else's favorite, but the idea that you think is dumbest is going to be the thing that's most popular. Mm-hmm. Like, I can count, you know, like zillions of years in the business and everybody's going, really? The thing with the dog. All these years, all this training, all this, and the thing with the dog is the thing you people like? Yes, they like the thing with the dog.
That's good advice. And I think sometimes that's where the fear comes from, right? Like that fear to trust the, you know, the part of us that's creative versus the part of us that you know, is trying to ground things in these rational, logical ways. Like I know a lot of times they go to war inside our heads and, you know, like, trying this, you know, pilot run or getting it out in some small way just to see what people are responding to, that's a huge opportunity for so many people right there. Okay, so I want to tackle the person who's there. You brought up this idea of like creativity as problem solving, and I think sometimes people get really stuck, and especially if you're logic driven, right? If you tend to kind of be in your logic practical mind all the time and everything's got to have a result and, you know, you're always looking for what, you know, what's the profit line and all that's super important. And I think sometimes like we're missing the creative spark that causes that unique positioning out there in the world, you know, the big flash that people are all looking for. Like, what would you advise to someone who's really trying to find the, what's the most profitable, logical thing they can do to move forward and they're totally stuck?
Yeah. So logic is such a useful tool, but it is only that. It is only a useful tool. It should not be your entire decision-making process any more than any other single tool should be, right? Like we wouldn't want to go at it, make all our decisions just purely from emotional, like I'm only going to do what feels good. Like that's, you know, what feels good is also a tool. It's also a little ometer you have inside of you, but it's not the only ometer. So logic is great, but logic I think is most useful a little bit further down the line. When you are initially trying to create something, especially something like a brand or a product or a business or a, you know, you want to have some impact in the world, start, and this is going to sound a little backwards, but start from the inside. Start from your desire. What is the thing that if somebody woke you up at 3 a.m. and said, hey, we're going to go do this thing. You want to come? You would be like, yeah. Look at my shoes. I'm coming. Right. Like, what is that thing? What is the, what are the values that drive that thing? What is the thing that you would do for free? Probably have been doing for free. What is the thing that really, when people hear about it, they say something like, oh, that is so you. When you start from that desire, when you start from that impulse, that idea, that thing that is only yours, you're telling the truth. You're telling the truth about who you are and what you do. And when you are telling the truth about who you are and what you do, you become like the whistle only dogs can hear. Right? The people who vibe with you, who dig what you're up to, will find you. And better yet, the people who do not vibe with you will not find you, which is excellent because nothing is more expensive than a bad client.
Well said. I think we've all had a few of those.
One or two.
Stuck with me for many, many years. I had a branding expert speak at an event I was hosting, and he drew this distinction of, you know, it's your job in your branding to attract as much as you repel. And that always stuck with me. It's like, because I'm such a people pleaser. It's like, I want everybody to like me and I like my work. And it's like, no, it's like, I need to be repelling the people that are just never going to get it. And this isn't their thing.
Yeah. And you know, this has come up, you sort of mentioned something like this earlier, and I think it's an important thing to talk about is our need to be liked and approved of and to have people think that what we do is amazing. And we all want that. And that's a very natural, normal human thing, right? We're tribal animals. We need the approval of the group to survive. To be rejected from the tribe is death. Like, that's not low self-esteem. That's a real thing. That's a real survival instinct. But again, I want to balance that desire with another part of you that generally doesn't care what anybody thinks about anything. The part of you that's like, oh, everybody can just kiss off. It's just, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do, right? So to move these two ideas closer together, it's not one or the other, it's both. And to sort of surf the tension between these two ideas, that's really where the juice is. And same kind of thing, like you're talking before, about like trying to use logic to figure out, well, what's going to be the most profitable? What are people really going to go for? Use the logic, but partner it with that desire, with that weird, quirky stuff that's inside you, or maybe plain vanilla, ordinary stuff that's inside you, you know, that you think, oh, no one wants that. That's too vanilla, right? And move those ideas closer together. Surf the tension between those two ideas. That's where the juicy life is.
Yeah. That's what you've sparked some really, really amazing conversations for us before in this exploration of duality. And I think that's what you're alluding to here is that sometimes highly creative people are doing a balancing act of the duality between these highly creative expressions. And yeah, we kind of have to get practical at times and we have to make money and we need to feed ourselves and maybe even have a business that's a thriving business. So, you know, finding, you know, peace in that duality and in that tension, I think is one of the mastery elements of embracing high achievers, highly successful, creative body of work.
Yeah.
So I brought up monetizing, making money. I feel like we have to talk about that a little bit because I know a lot of creative people that kind of balk at the idea of monetizing their creativity. You know, it's like either it doesn't occur to them that this is possible or there's some kind of deep fear or belief that, you know, making money with your creative art is bad or wrong. And so, like, what is your take on that? And how do people find that again, that tension of making money with something that also feeds their soul with creativity?
Yeah. So, I have so many things to say about this. Where do I want to start?
We need to do a whole call on that, right?
I know, right? I mean, it's understandable to just love making stuff and not really want to get involved in the marketing or sales of it. And if that's you, that's fine. But it's a little like saying, Well, I want to have children, but only when they're neat and well-behaved and, you know, polite. We call that being an aunt, right?
Right.
So if you're just going to make stuff and don't ever have to want to worry about selling it or marketing it, then that's a hobby. And hobbies are beautiful, soul-expanding, fun, engaging, wonderful ways to connect with yourself and your creativity and other people. And if that's what it is for you, then let it be that and drop the idea of selling it or marketing it. Just free yourself from that. Have some other way that money comes to you. If, however, you really feel like the thing that you make or create helps people, it gives them a moment of calm, it gives them beauty, it gives them a richness in their life, it tells them new stories, it engages them in some way, then you have to charge for it. And here was the thing I thought of the other day that kind of blew my mind a little bit. When you are undercharging or giving away for free something that you should be charging for, you are lying. You are misrepresenting the value of what you do. You are lying in exactly the same way that if I said, oh, Melanie, you should pay me $10,000 for this pen because it's a really special pen, but it was really a 99-cent pen. Well, that would be deceptive. That would be duplicitous, right? I would be lying about the value of this pen. That would be wrong. We don't do that. It is equally wrong to undercharge so that people do not know the value of what it is you're giving them. It's like if I handed you a diamond and said, oh no, I just picked this up at Target, do whatever you want with it. And you wouldn't know to treat it as something of value.
Mm. See what I mean? So much wisdom. you just blew my mind with that. And it's so powerful what you're saying.
Because I think there's a little bit of a moral high ground there where people are like, no, you know, I don't want to charge for it because that's, you know, like somehow that's better, you know, that's morally cleaner. But I kind of blew my own mind when I thought about it. I was like, no, that's lying.
And we're also setting the other person up to miss out on the opportunity to invest in something that's changing their life or giving them value. And then we basically disrupt the flow of prosperity. That's my take on what you just said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The last time, you know, Northwestern University asked me to run a peer group mentoring thing for them. And I had done it a couple of times, and it's usually three sessions. And what I noticed was that there would be a ton of people at the first one and some at the second and fewer, and then, you know, down to whatever at the third. So I said, listen, I'll do it for you and I'll do it for free. But here's the thing. You've got to charge everybody $150. And for every session they come to, I will give them $50 back. And anything that's left at the end, I'll give to the alumni fund or whatever. But I'm like, I'm not doing this for free anymore because they just, you know, they were recent college graduates. They didn't understand. And I would get this, oh, I'm really busy. Oh, it's a long drive. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you are not busier than me. Okay. And I'm making it here. So if I'm going to make the time, then you make the time. But if you don't charge people, they don't know.
Yes. So the learning in this for so many creatives and people who are wanting to have more creativity is that there has to be a value exchange. And you said not charging, but I would even challenge that anybody who's undercharging, they're not charging what they know this could be worth. You know, there's an opportunity to really like stand fully in your value. That might take some confidence. You might need to do some mindset work around it, but you have to be willing to really step into that for everything to get back into balance.
Well, especially since, and really there's so many things about the world of personal development that drive me crazy. And this is one of them is when people talk about, oh, charge what you're worth, charge what you're worth, charge what you're worth. No, it has nothing to do with your worth. Your worth is intrinsic. Right? A human being's worth is intrinsic. If we had six babies here, we wouldn't say that that baby is worth more than that baby. That would be ridiculous. All babies are worth the same. All people's internal value is the same. We are not charging based on what you are worth. We are charging based on what it is worth to them. What is the value to them? How will it change their life? How will it change their story? How will it change their business? How will it change their body? How will it change their communication skills or their relationships? And what's the value of that to them? That's where you charge.
And when that's where it gets juicy.
Right? And that's where it gets juicy. Because obviously it's a little easier. You know, I have a class I teach sometimes called How to Make $1,000 Anytime You Want. And clearly it would be easy for me to charge $1,000 for that because I'm going to teach you how to make $1,000, right? So that would be fair. Now I tend to believe that you should provide 3 to 10 times value to what you're charging. So I would actually take that $1,000 and charge somewhere between $100 and $300 for it, which is, I think, what it is. I think it's like $197 or something. Right. So now I know that I am providing an outstanding value for the person buying it because it's demonstrably worth $1,000, probably way more than that because they can make it over and over again, but let's just say it's $1,000. And then I reduce that so that they are getting 3 to 10 times value with every time they buy it.
That's a great little formula. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, and it works with stuff that's softer too. Like if you're in the world of spirituality or relationships or coaching or something, and it's a little harder to say like, well, you know, it's not like if you do more yoga, you're going to make more money. But you can say, well, what's it costing you to be so stressed out? What's it costing you to be so out of shape? What's it costing you to not know how to take a deep breath? And what would it be worth to you to be able to stand a little taller, to feel more comfortable in your body? You know, if you felt more comfortable in your body, would you be able to, you know, ask somebody to partner with you? Would you take a chance you wouldn't take it otherwise? You know, if you sort of follow the breadcrumbs a little bit, you'll eventually come to a place where you go like, oh, wow, that's totally, we could totally put a number on that. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's having little formulas to take the mystery out of how to price yourself can be so helpful. And I never learned that one before. That's a really good one.
Other thing that's fun, just real quick about pricing, because again, I'm talking the creatives. You can all pricing. There's an art. There's a science to it, but there's also an art to it. So don't be afraid to have your pricing have a story. You know, when I sell the Get It Done workshop for years, I sold it at $365, $1 a day for your project. Right. I had a client one time who was creating a writing program, and it was kind of witchy, you know, it was kind of had some mysticism to it. And so she charged $333.33 because 3 is a little bit of a magic number for her, you know? So like, don't be afraid to let the numbers tell a little bit of a story and pick a number, a pricing number that is again, fair, that applies the value to the person, 3 to 10 times value, but also feels good to you. That feels kind of fun and delicious to you.
Yeah. And maybe even a little stretch, right? Yeah, I think it's okay to stretch a little bit and have a little bit of that, like, yeah, this is a little scary to stand in this, but I'm willing to because, you know, you're allowing yourself to be expanded a little bit.
And, you know, it's only scary until the money hits your bank account. And then all of a sudden it is not scary at all.
Yeah, I have a little saying, like, if I'm not getting a few rejections, I'm probably not charging enough. So...
Oh yeah. If people aren't fighting you on your pricing's too low. If people aren't complaining about your marketing, you're not doing enough marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I have to ask you one other thing before we wrap up. And this, you know, this is something I think you used the word elegant earlier, and I think you do this very elegantly. And that is you balance several different kinds of projects. And that, so this makes my brain melt, right? Like I'm not good at this part, but you know, had a play and that you wrote a script for, or yeah, it was a play, not a musical. You know, you were writing a book, you're running your company, you are coaching, you're launching these different offerings. And it's almost like you have a way of letting all these different seemingly unrelated things have space. How do you balance that?
Well, you know, there's a bit of conventional wisdom that says, oh, you should just focus on one thing. Mm-hmm. And I believe that people who like to focus on one thing should focus on one thing. And that people who like to focus on several things should focus on several. I find that I do better when I have 3 to 5 kind of big projects going at the same time. Like if I'm just barely at the red zone of too busy, that's just about right for me. Now notice I said 3 to 5, not 17 to 30.
Mm-hmm. You're not trying to be Beyonce here.
I am not trying to be Beyonce as much as I would love to. Yeah, no. And what I find is that they feed each other. And this is the real, this is another thing that people often don't understand about highly creative people, is that when you are making money from your creativity, right? So, which is an endless and endlessly renewable resource, it's not really that draining. And in fact, I find that my work gives me energy. It's not as depleting as it was when I would go to a day job. And I had some great, great day gigs, but boy, I was beat by the end of the day because it's exhausting to have to do other people's stuff the way they want you to do it. When you get to do your own stuff in the way that you want to do it, it's not that hard. It's a lot of fun. And like I said, yeah, it really, it lights me up. It keeps me going. I mean, I'm tired at the end of the day. Sometimes I work long hours, but I'm not stressed out about it. I feel invigorated.
Hmm. So it's about knowing that balance for you. I mean, I call this finding your power threshold. Like there's a threshold for so many of us that when you move beyond it, like you're overwhelmed, you're exhausted, you're depleted, your soul's drained. But just on the other side of that is that creative tension. And I call it good stress, right? Like you might have a little stress going, but it's expanding you. It's pulling something out of you that's really powerful. So it sounds like you found that zone for yourself.
Yeah, it's funny. I just was doing some writing the other day about stress and its relationship to integrity. I think that a lot of times we feel stressed when we're out of integrity.
Mm.
You know, which is when you're not living a life that's aligned with your values. I mean, if you say that your values are honesty and creativity and love, but you are not spending your time being honest, creative, and loving, then you're going to feel a little fractured. You're not going to feel whole. You're not in integrity has to do with wholeness, being the same all the time, the same all the way through, like a whole number, an integer, same root word. So, but when you are aligned with what you're doing, with when your values and your sort of, like I said, your zone of genius, when those things all sort of line up, yeah, it gets really easy and really fun. And you really start to experience the leverage, right? I can do a little bit and get a big result because the alignment is so strong.
Yeah, well said. And I think that's what we're all searching for, is that experience of being in expansion that feels effortless because we are really plugged into that creative juice and it's nurturing us instead of draining us. And I think, you know, that's the balance. Again, that's that tension you're looking for, is what's really plugging you in. And it might feel like a lot, but it's really empowering you. It's exciting. It's inspiring. Oh, I love this. We could go all day, and I have so many things I want to talk to you about. We'll have to do a part two at some point. I wanted to have you share one of your resources with our community, because I love this so much, especially for the people who procrastinate, put things off, you know, tend to come up with excuses and don't really drop into that aligned action. Can you share what your procrastination domination starter kit is? And we'll share how people can find it.
Yes, the procrastination domination starter kit is two of my very best exercises. To help you, the first one helps you decide which of your 137 projects you should really be working on right now. And the second one has to do with dealing with compliments and criticisms. Because while the criticisms can be terrible, sometimes the compliments are even worse, right? Like, oh no, not everyone thinks I'm great. I'm gonna have to be great all the time. Like, it's too much pressure.
I might be an imposter and they'll find out.
Then they're going to find out.
Oh, and it's really, it's super fast. You know, I've been to workshops you've done where you've taken people through this process, and it's so insightful. There's so much power in this clarity that you have. And so I know you set up a special URL for our community, The Real Sam Bennett. That's Bennett, 2Ns and 2Ts.com/amplify. We will link this up in the show notes for you. So don't worry if you're scrambling to write it down. We'll make sure you guys have a great, easy link to follow there on the show notes. So, Sam, I like to wrap people up by asking them a little bit about the personal side of success, because it's all well and good, you know, we're sharing all the yummy stuff that's come out of all the hard work. But I know there had to be a moment in your journey where you had to make a scary decision to play a bolder game, to really step things up. What would you say one of those moments was for you?
You know, one of them was the first time I invested in a really high-end coaching program. Mm. And I didn't have it. I didn't have the money. I didn't have a way to make the money. I didn't have a plan to make the money. But I believed that I could somehow. I knew I needed to be in that room. I knew I needed to be around other people who were up to the same kind of thing I was. I knew there were things about me and my business that I couldn't see. You know, you can't see what you can't see. You don't know what you don't know. I needed somebody else's eyes on me. And sometimes, Melanie, I think that they could have just charged me that money and left me alone, because I don't think I had ever taken myself that seriously before. There was something about that action of saying, okay, I'm going to invest this, you know, five figures, you know, more than my college tuition cost practically, you know, more than any car I'd ever bought. And I'm spending that on me because I'm worth it and my business is worth it and the people I serve are worth it. And I'm going to do this and I'm going to make it work. And it turns out that I respond really well to intense financial pressure. Some people don't. Some people, you know, create a big bill like that and they freak out. I doubled my income and then I doubled it again almost right away. It wasn't hard for me. But that moment of saying, I'm gonna spend this money with the coach, and it changed everything.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many people who I asked that question on this, on the Amplifier Success Show, answer that the same way, that the single the best return on investment decision they ever made was investing in a mastermind or coaching program that stretched them deeply. And I think that's really, it's great wisdom to know that if you're thinking about investing in a coach or mentoring program, yeah, if it's not scaring you a little bit, it's probably not a big enough investment for you.
Yeah. And you know, investments in yourself always pay off. You know, everything's tuition, right? You're going to pay to learn either in money or in time.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's you investing in your own self and your own personal development, and as we know, entrepreneurship is the single greatest tool for spiritual growth and personal development of all total time. Whatever you're doing, your results are going to show up in your business, and they are giving you an opportunity and an invitation to learn and to grow.
Yeah, well said. Thank you. Well, Sam, I almost hate to end our conversation today, but we will definitely bring a part two around in the very near future. And as you're listening in, I want you to know that Samantha is one of my all-time favorite authors. When I've read her books, Get It Done and Start Right Where You Are, I like want to cry. She's such a beautiful writer. Her work moves me so deeply. So I invite you to pick up one of her best-selling books. And we will all breathlessly wait with anticipation for the new one coming out, Sam. So I'll keep your feet to the fire on that one. We're all going to be ready for it now.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. Melanie, thank you so much for everything you do for your community. You're such an inspiration and a light and a love in the world.
Thank you, darling. I love you bunches. All right. Well, thank you for listening in today and cannot wait to share our next episode with you. This is Melanie Benson, your host. Thanks so much for listening in today. If you want to catch up on any of the show notes and circle back on any of the resources we shared in today's show, head on over to the show page at amplifyyoursuccesspodcast.com. And remember, you amplify your results faster when you're in a community of other people who are moving and shaking. Join us at amplifyyoursuccesscommunity.com.
One last thing. When you've gained insight from today's episode, help us share that and inspire other people by heading over to iTunes, subscribing, and give it a review. iTunes absolutely loves seeing these reviews pop up, and it actually helps boost my show's visibility. So I would be super grateful for your reviews. And as always, I love seeing your shares of these episodes on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Come find me over there. Tag me in your shares. I'll give you some social media love right back. So, see you next week for another inspiring episode of Amplify Your Success Podcast.